Blog Talk Radio.
Right-wing nationalists have used the occasion of the protest to attack police,
using petrol bombs, rocks, and weapons in an effort to incite a violent response. As the video shows, and there's a video here, some peaceful anti-government protesters on Sunday put themselves between the violent, masked provocateurs and a line of riot police who had taken up a defensive position.
No, this is all in Ukrainian, so it's, I don't think there's any room.
Let's see what it
voice here. Yeah, they're showing activists, showing rioters.
Provocateurs.
Yeah, provocateurs trying to go against the
trying to get the police to react.
And then you got guys in the speedies that are taking the brunt, but they're stopping, they're trying to stand between them. Standing between the cops and the rioters. That's amazing.
They're provocateurs. Yeah, they're trying to incite the police to destroy the demonstrators.
Oh, they come after? No, they come after the right wingers. Throwing rocks and all kinds of stuff. But it's interesting.
Well, they're trying to get the right police to react.
That's
the brave guy.
Yeah, this guy. But anyway.
We should not be provoked. There are lots of provocateurs. We can change the power in a civilized way. Our rally in Kiev today is peaceful protest only, said heavyweight boxer Vitaly Klitschko, a member of parliament, one of the most famous people in the Ukraine and a supporter of the revolution, told people during a speech in the square on Sunday.
This is fascinating. Again, some of the protesters took over a big bulldozer, and they're going after it. Look at this. They're going to drive through the police. Bulldozer of protesters is ready to drive through a huge crowd of policemen. All the doctor and all kinds of stuff. It's really, really wild.
Well, anyway, let me leave it. Let's go back. Who is a member of parliament, is one of the many of the Ukrainian lawmakers siding with the protesters, and as negotiations continue behind closed doors on the government response, the life of the protest movement is making progress of its own, as the New York Times reports. Ina Barsha-Slavoka, a member of parliament who quit Mr. Yankovych's party of regions in support of the demonstrators, called on Monday for the government to resign. Demonstrators also continue to occupy City Hall in Kiev, where windows have been smashed and walls covered with graffiti. Under a sign for the Kiev City Council, someone had painted in black, Revolution Headquarters. After a huge rally on Sunday, a crowd estimated at a million or more that observers say exceeded even the largest gatherings of the Orange Revolution 9 years ago, the demonstrators overnight blocked city streets using Christmas decorations and police barricades intended to stop the protest. The result was an oddly festive, fur-trimmed encampment of the heart of the Ukrainian capital. Protest leaders, sensing that the momentum had turned to their advantage, continued to add infrastructure to the operation, bringing in TV monitors and erecting a small tent city that included first aid stations and canteens. Having occupied the nearby trade unions building on Sunday, they seized control of a giant screen mounted on its facade and replaced the advertising it had carried, first with images of yellow, starred European Union flag, and by Monday morning with a live video feed of speakers on the protest stage outside. On Twitter, they have tweets on this whole thing.
I don't care. So that's what's fascinating here, though, is that you really you can go to Common Dreams. If you go to Common Dreams dot just commondreams.com, I think.
Do I understand that this protest is started when the government refused to recognize the
European Union? That's right.
And
It's not that they didn't recognize it, they didn't want to join.
They didn't want to join, or they didn't want to continue with their whatever their negotiations.
Right, and they said that any association with the EU would be economic suicide for the Ukraine. All right, and that may be true. That may be true. That's why they're not. That's why they didn't want to. That's why they didn't want to do it. And that's why people are so mad. Because they think that
that they'd be better off.
Yeah,
having
they
that
think
use.
They'd be better off. And here's another quick piece on that. But it says.
Clashes erupted in the UK, same thing.
It says, we were furious, 62-year-old retired businessman said, told the Associated Press, leaders must resign. We want Europe and freedom. The scene on Sunday was reminiscent of the old Orange Revolution of 2004, where millions joined in. Let's see.
So
I want the authorities to know that this is not a protest, this is a revolution, said Yuri Lutsenko, a former interior minister and a leader of the Ukraine's Orange Revolution in 2004, speaking to the huge crowd that thronged Independence Square in defiance of court order revolution. The crowd roared back, revolution, and the angry mood was galvanized by the violent breakup of a sit-in and protest in Independence Square on Saturday morning, when several hundred riot police dispersed a thousand-strong crowd of mainly students. And there were the final few who had not gone home after early protests, and the riot police moved in, causing the number of casualties. And the city authorities rather implausibly claimed that they needed the square to order in order to erect a giant Christmas tree.
Yeah.
Early on Saturday...
About being out of touch, huh?
Yeah. Early on Sunday, in an attempt to dampen the unrest further, Kiev court banned all rallies of Independence Square. But the move had the opposite effect, with people flocking to the square in their thousands. The incomplete Christmas tree was hung with Ukrainian flags, and the vast square gradually filled up with people until they spilled out into the neighboring street. You want to talk about being out of touch?
They think they're going to have freedom with the European Union. They're just the economic slaves.
It's, you know, the problem that I see...
Slaves to one or the other.
But the problem that I see here is maybe this guy right here. And
Popovic?
Yeah. It's in another Stratfor manufactured revolutionary.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, this is an interesting one because here's a guy who's a revolutionary backed by Goldman Sachs. And a bunch of others.
Can hardly wait to make them economic slaves.
Globally renowned activist, okay, is exposed, collaborated with intelligence firm Stratfor. Okay. Serbia's Popovic is known by many as a leading architect of regime changes in Eastern Europe and elsewhere since the late 1990s, and is one of the co-founders of Outpour, the U.S.-funded Serbian activist group that overthrew Milosevic in 2000. The lesser-known and exclusive Occupy.com investigation reveals that Popovic and Outpour are offshoot Canvas, Center for Applied Nonviolent Action and Strategies, have also maintained close ties with the Goldman Sachs executive and the private intelligence firm Stratfor, as well as the U.S. government. And Popovic's wife also works at Stratfor for a year. These revelations come in the aftermath of thousands of emails released by WikiLeaks and global intelligence files.
Emails reveal Popovic worked closely with Stratfor, an Austin, Texas-based private firm that gathers intelligence on geopolitical events and activists. for clients ranging from the American Petroleum Institute, Archer Daniels Midland, Dow Chemical, Duke Energy, Northrop Grumman, Intel, and Coca-Cola. So it's a, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's national,
corporate,
revolutionary, globalism.
Yeah, it's a fascist.
Revolutionary.
It's fascist sponsored. It's government.
Yeah.
It's a corporation sponsored terrorism.
That's revolution. Revolutionary.
Yeah, it turned them into economic slaves. That's all.
Yeah, unbelievable. Anyway,
those poor people think they're going to be free.
That's what worries me.
What kind of freedom is it?
Yeah.
But what's offered on the other side, I don't know either.
Yeah. Well, we don't know either, but. Russian President Vladimir Putin said protests in Ukraine against the decision to abandon a European Union integration pact are an attempt to bring down its legitimate rulers. The protesters blockaded the main government building. We just read that, but weekend demonstrations. But Vladimir Putin is against this revolution.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. There was this on there. Mostly on, I wanted to read some of the stuff on there.
There was something on this that I was interested in. People are dying from the cold and flu.
Isn't that sad? That was a sad thing. I mean, this one too. We may have talked about this.
Agenda 21.
Yeah,
yep.
In Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
But
that was kind of fascinating. I thought.
Our enemy is not global warming. In Britain, police are dying of the
people.
Cold. People,
no.
I'm sorry. That police here. People are dying of cold. So,
it's very,
England
very
is
sad.
Not the greatest little country in the world here, folks.
No, you think it has, it's social welfare, but apparently it's only for some.
Yeah, for corporate welfare, just like it is here. Just like here. I don't know.
You hit again?
Yep. This is the third time tonight I've been hacked on this computer. There's something there.
Oh, let me go to this.
So
while Leo's bringing up his other computer, I have the iPad here. Americans, here's an interesting thing. Americans want Congress members to pee in cups to prove they're not on drugs. I love that.
Yeah, that was good.
Let's go to this one. That's from the Huffington Post, actually. See if we can get something to come up here. Americans want Congress members to pee in cup to prove they're not on drugs. While most Americans like the idea of drug testing for welfare recipients, they love the idea of drug testing for members of Congress. According to a new Huffington Post YouGov poll, 64% of Americans favor requiring welfare recipients to submit to random drug testing, a measure pushed by Republican lawmakers in recent years, while 18% oppose it. But an even stronger majority said they're in favor of random drug testing for members of Congress, by 78%. 62% said they strongly favor testing for congressional lawmakers, compared to only 51% who said the same for welfare recipients. I agree with that. Right on. Okay. Here's an interesting one. Those vaccinated with the pertussis vaccine are spreading disease. How about that?
Yeah, I thought that was unique.
Even the mainstream media outlets like the New York Times are publishing the truth. Let's see what they say about that. Green Med Info. That's a site I'm not familiar with.
Yeah, they come. I've read a lot of stuff from them over the years.
The recent news articles to hit the mainstream media in the past week finally states with public health officials and epidemiologists have known for some time. Those vaccinated against pertussis are carrying spreading bacteria are the most responsible for the outbreaks. This news raises the question, should we hold those vaccinated with pertussis vaccine legally liable for the outbreak. And if you look up scholarly articles about previous outbreaks of measles, you'll find academic papers on the entity termed the paradox of measles. A paradox because those vaccinated are the ones contracting the disease, while the unvaccinated in many communities with outbreaks are unscathed. In addition, the rise in shingles over the past decade or so is due to the chickenpox vaccine. This link is not denied in academic literature and was even predicted by mathematical biologists and was confirmed by another study funded by the CDC. If vaccinated children and adults are capable of spreading disease, shall we hold them and their parents legally liable for outbreaks? Shall we mandate unvaccination as a requirement for public schools since we can't unvaccinate? Shall vaccinated children be kicked out of public schools? While the above statements may seem absurd, they are equivalent arguments bioethicist Art Kaplan has and continues to make. Kaplan believes parents of unvaccinated children should be held legally liable for outbreaks of disease. Mind you, Kaplan is no regular academic bioethicist. He is a bioethicist who has made a good deal of money for writing pro-industry speak. If you read about Art Kaplan and his direct financial conflict of interest, you'll also read Art believes these financial conflicts can be managed while producing unbiased work. He and his previous institution of employment, the University of Pennsylvania Department of Bioethics, receives mega fees from major pharmaceutical companies, and the Department of Vaccine Bioethics at UPenn was massively funded by the big vaccine producers. In addition, DTaP, rendering recipients colonized with pertussis bacteria, consider the following. Recently vaccinated children must be kept away from cancer patients lest they shed vaccine virus. The oral polio vaccine was the cause of all polio cases in the U.S. for several decades until finally the vaccine industry had a vaccine to replace it with. The nasal flu vaccine renders the recipient shedding viruses for several days. The rotavirus vaccine is shed in the recipient's stool, causing diarrhea in other children. The above examples are just a few of how the recently vaccinated can shed pathogens and hence spread disease. So while the mainstream media is waking up to the realities of vaccination and outbreaks, shall we turn all those who chose to vaccinate and make them pariahs? I think the freedom to choose the risks versus benefits of vaccinating should be left to the consumer and not dictated by those with conflicts of interest. Well, I agree with that.
I agree, but I just don't think you should have one. I don't think vaccines have proven themselves to be anything. You know what scared me?
What's that?
Right there. Cause of autism.
Oh.
Women who take Tylenol during pregnancy, all right, have a high risk of their children turning being autistic.
Really?
Yeah.
That's an interesting thing. This is from Natural News.
Yep.
As many as 65% of women are said to take it during pregnancy, but Tylenol, the active ingredient of which is acetaminophen, has been linked in a new study out of Norway to causing autism in children. Expectant mothers who took the drug while pregnant to deal with headaches or mild fevers were found to be significantly more likely to bear children with behavior problems, poor language and motor skills, and communication difficulties compared to mothers who did not take the drug. The study included data on 48,000 Norwegian children whose mothers participated in a survey evaluating their medication use at week 17 and 30 of pregnancy, as well as 6 months after giving birth. The survey also included a follow-up that looked at the children's developmental progress at 3 years of age, which was then compared to the mother's drug intake during the later stages of pregnancy. What was discovered was that some 4% of women took Tylenol for at least 28 days total during their pregnancies. And children born to this subset of mothers tended to have more functional and behavioral problems than children born to mothers who took less or no Tylenol. These same Tylenol-exposed children also tended to begin to walking later than the non-exposed children and had poorer communication and language skills. Our findings suggest that acetaminophen might not be as harmless as we think, said the author of the study from the University of Oslo in Norway. Long-term use of acetaminophen increased the risk of behavior problems by 70% at age 3. That's considerable. Johnson & Johnson, who owns the Tylenol brand, insists that the drug has an extensive track record of safety and has not been linked to premature birth and miscarriage. But the study, which was published in the International Journal of Epidemiology, suggests otherwise in terms of actual childhood development. It could even compare Tylenol to other common pain medications like ibuprofen, which were not found to induce behavior problems. We always recommend that consumers carefully read and follow the label instructions when using any over-the-counter medication, admits J&J in a statement. In addition, our label notes if pregnant or breastfeeding, ask a health professional before use. Commenting on the study, Ann Z. Bauer, a doctoral candidate at the University of Massachusetts Lowell School of Health and Environment, inferred that pregnant women may want to avoid taking Tylenol and instead switch to an alternative. Her own research also suggests that acetaminophen may trigger these and various other symptoms in children, which categorically speaking can be defined as autism. Mm. The developmental problems seen in this study align with symptoms of autism spectrum disorder, though the children had not been diagnosed at age 3. Our research also found that acetaminophen depletes the body's natural reserve of glutathione, the master antioxidant responsible for mitigating free radical damage, which in turn protects the body against oxidative damage, inflammation, serious injury to the brain, and other vital organs. Because it is incredibly toxic to the liver, Tylenol consumption promotes the body to use large amounts of glutathione to diminish this toxicity, which leaves the body more prone to developing the symptoms commonly attributed to autism. Many children with autism spectrum disorder have poor transsulfuration and methylation. They can't make glutathione, and even worse, they can't activate many neurotransmitters in the brain. Oh, this is why Tylenol could possibly trigger autism in kids who are genetically susceptible. That's a scary thought.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if there's more than one cause.
Of autism?
Yeah.
Sure, I'm sure there probably are.
You know, there's a combination, a cocktail that just pushes the body over the edge.
But this may not answer it, but it deals with the mind and the healing process of the mind. It's from the waking times. It says, body, mind, and spirit, understanding the links between health and consciousness. By Tracy Kolonchuk. Body, mind, and spirit are often presented as the wholeness of health. However, body, mind, and spirit are poorly defined, poorly distinguished, and poorly articulated in many health or sick care practices. Philosophers have pondered for centuries and more the definitions and locations of mind and spirit. We often confuse or mix discussions of body, mind, and spirit with body, mind, and soul. I will not discuss the concept of soul. We each have one body, at least two brains, many minds, and many, many spirits. Oh, that's interesting. to develop a science of health as seen, as opposed to medicine, we need useful, functional, practical definitions and distinctions. Well, we remember this. She's saying that we each have one body, at least two brains, I guess that's left and right brain, many minds, many, many spirits. I don't know if I understand that.
I don't either.
But this goes on further to explain, I guess. We can start with the brain. In the hierarchy, the brain is an organ, or a number of organs. As an organ, it is a collection of tissues that perform certain functions, sensing, filtering, and senses, and reacting to sensations. The brain is part of the whole body,
pardon me,
a collection of all body parts. Where do you find the mind? In the body or in the brain? Nowhere. The mind is separate from the body, separate from the brain. We cannot find the mind in the brain. How do we recognize the mind and recognize components and functions of the mind from components and functions of the brain? The brain can exist without consciousness. The mind is consciousness. There are animals that have a nervous system but no mind. The first functions of the nervous system are to sense danger and food, and then to move the body away from the danger and towards food. What does the mind emerge from the brain? It is a difficult question, so I propose a simple answer. When we learn to pee, to pee or not to pee, that is the answer. Gradually, animals develop sentience, the first hints of thinking consciousness. We don't need to draw an exact line. We only need a useful distinction. The mind is conscious. Boxers are knocked unconscious for short periods of time. We make conscious decisions that can be incredibly complex. And the line between the brain and the mind's eye, or lies rather, in the brain and the mind lies in conscious control of the mind over the body. Yes, we have more than one mind. We are of more than one mind. Indecision is an important component of intelligence and an important component of healthiness. So, I guess we have decision and indecision, 2 minds?
Who knows?
I don't know. Well, anyway,
I don't think she's very clear, sorry.
She's not that clear, I guess. But what about the spirit? I think I'm going to, this gets a little more deeper and a little more complex, but
I think you'd have to reflect on what she has to say.
Yeah, I don't have time to reflect on this, but in 1 hour.
No.
We have to be out there. I mean, I read the article earlier, I skimmed through it, and I said, no, that's interesting. But then I said, well, not as interesting. So, let's see, there's a, you went through all kinds of stuff that I wanted to read here.
Okay.
Okay, let's put it way back.
Yep, you can see what it is, if there's something you wanted to share with the folks at home.
Yeah. This friend of mine sent this to me today on Facebook and says, it's from it's cannabis weed oil, a miracle drug. Okay. Yeah, I think it is. But what's actually funny, and there's a little documentary on this, but what was funny was weed or cannabis is legal in 2 states. Having sex with a horse is legal in 23 states.
Oh, my God.
Good job, America. Can you imagine that? Yeah. It's legal to have sex with a horse in 23 states in this country.
Yeah.
But,
okay.
But only 2 states allow weed to be legal. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Let's see. This was a big one for me. Since I'm a gluten allergic guy. Gluten free is going mainstream as nearly 1/3 of Americans seek to avoid gluten.
That's amazing, isn't it?
Isn't that something?
We couldn't, when you first figured out you were...
No, we couldn't find any.
We couldn't find any gluten-free products.
Yeah, a friend of ours, Jan, told us that you know, because she was gluten free as well, and she said, oh, there's a place in Torrington that sells.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, wow. Because we couldn't find it anywhere at that time. That was about, what, 5 years ago?
Yeah, maybe a little more than
5 years
ago.
Yeah. Well, I found out that I was...
People didn't even know what gluten was.
Yeah, I found out in 2006 or 2007 is when I found out I had a gluten allergy. And then and it was a food allergy, you know. So, boy, it took a lot of years. It took about a year before I could correct my diet enough to...
I know it.
...to get rid of it. And I was fine after that. But,
well, people should understand the reason is such a problem with gluten is that we have genetically modified food.
No, I
have. And what it's done is it's exacerbated the amount of gluten, which is a protein.
Yeah, I have another. I have an excellent video on this by a food activist, a mother.
Oh, okay.
Who discovered that? Who was the first? In fact, I think we played this maybe a couple of years back, but about her. But she was the one that discovered all the problems with childhood with kids' food. And let me just go on.
Okay.
Panic must really be setting in for the wheat industry these days as consumers increasingly seek to avoid food products that contain gluten. According to the latest available figures, as many as 1 in 3 people, or about 105 million Americans, now actively shun gluten due to diagnosed celiac disease, gluten sensitivity or intolerance, or personal choice, proving that the gluten-free designation has officially gone mainstream.
Well, why don't they just stop buying genetically modified wheat and you wouldn't have a problem?
Well, not us. I mean, they have to stop putting in the food. They have to label it. And the minute they start labeling it, all right, then the wheat industry will go out of business. In a rant against what we obviously consider to be just an annoying fad, Bloomberg writer Matthew Boyle explains that many food manufacturers are having to reformulate their products to cater to this growing demand for gluten-free foods. Companies like General Mills and the Kellogg's Company, for instance, are phasing out from some of their products, not only wheat flour, but also conspicuous gluten ingredients like barley malt syrup and malt syrup. This is good news for the roughly 1% of Americans that suffer from celiac disease, an autoimmune digestive illness that results in severe damage to the small intestine. Even just a decade ago, celiac folks had a very much harder time finding gluten-free foods. That is until a much larger segment of the population decided to jump on the gluten-free bandwagon, creating increased demand for foods that are free of wheat. To many self-proclaimed skeptics, however, choosing to go gluten-free without a diagnosed health condition is foolish, even though a substantial and growing body of evidence suggests that up to 70% of the population now suffers from some form of gluten intolerance or sensitivity, which may or may not be accompanied by immediate and severe symptoms. Some critics have flat-out dismissed the concept as being the product of best-selling anti-gluten books and celebrity endorsements. I have to tell you, and I'll endorse this, I found out through a doctor, through Kath Ingram, actually, of Natural Foods, North American Herb and Spice, the guy...
You were talking to him on the phone, and he said,
we were interviewing him, and I said, look, I developed some kind of a skin problem. On my
psoriasis, right?
I didn't know it was psoriasis. I did. It looked like it. I said, geez, I got it. I don't know how to cure this. They say it's incurable. He says, that's crap. He says, it's a food allergy. He says, people get it all the time. He says, I'm thinking that it might be because I can't, when I stop drinking beer, and it started to go away. Okay.
Right.
He says, you have wheat in there, Leo, and you have gluten in that, and you have wheat products. He says, you're probably allergic to wheat, you know.
Something in wheat.
Or something in wheat, or, you know, I think he said gluten.
Gluten, I think he said.
And the guy, and he also said he had a patient who had been suffering with psoriasis for 30 years, and they found out he was allergic to chicken.
Yeah.
Okay, and then
like our dog.
Yeah, our dog is allergic to chicken and grain. Tell me that ain't. At least I don't think I'm allergic to chicken anyway, but definitely I'm allergic to wheat. And you can be allergic to wheat, corn, soy, all of that. And we have to give them a grain-free diet.
And a chicken-free diet.
Yeah, that's pretty. Yeah.
That's pretty hard for all dog food. It has a lot of chicken in it, or chicken broth, or
all kinds of jazz. But you know, he's a 12-year-old dog, so he's kind of like up there in age, and his tolerance for GMO food is like mine. There's no tolerance anymore.
What was happening with him is that he was biting his feet because they were so itchy.
Yeah, and he was scratching them.
Yeah, poor thing.
And then we discovered that, and that was the
We went into an animal store, Petco, in Torrington, in Connecticut, where we live. We live outside of Torrington.
A friend of ours told us that to get wellness or something it was called.
Right.
And we checked to see if that was, because it was grain free, you know, good for her dog.
Right.
And we got that. And then, but the one we got, I don't know, did that have chicken in it?
No, we talked to the salesperson there.
Yeah, yeah.
And he told us that very often dogs develop an allergy to chicken. As well as the grain, and he said that could be the culprit. And then he pointed us in the direction of a certain kind of food. He said, you got to read all the...
No chicken and no wheat. Yeah.
And that did it.
Yeah, it was $3 a can.
Yeah, boy.
Yeah. But anyway, the thing was that turned out our dog was allergic to the chicken stuff in his food as well. So... anyway, let me just finish this. This is an important subject to me, and I think to 100 million people. Millions of Americans are being harmed by modern wheat varieties, says influential doctor. But is this a fair assumption? There are literally millions of people today with inexplicable digestive problems and other health issues, and going gluten-free has helped many of them experience noticeable improvements.
That's
good. To simply dismiss the gluten-free craze as some type of mindless fad foisted on the unwitting public by uninformed celebrities is both patronizing and unscientific. Documented peculiar effects of wheat on humans include appetite stimulation, exposure to brain-active exorphins, the counterpart of internally derived endorphins, exaggerated blood sugar surges that trigger cycles of satiety.
I never heard of it.
I think it's being satiated.
Being full.
Yeah.
And then.
Yeah, cycles of being full, alternating with heightened appetite. So you go high and low, it's like sugar does to you.
Mm-hmm.
And the process of glycation that underlies diseases and aging, inflammatory and pH effects that erode cartilage and damage bone, and activation of disordered immune responses. Davis, MD, excerpt from his New York Times.
I also read in an article that it causes inflammation and swelling in the brain and can be responsible for hyperactivity in children.
That's right.
So it's not necessarily ADD or ADHD, but it looks like it.
Touches on it. Okay, a complex range of diseases results from consumption of wheat, from celiac disease, a devastating intestinal disease that develops from exposure to wheat gluten, to an assortment of neurological disorders, diabetes, health disease, arthritis, curious rashes, and the paralyzing delusions of schizophrenia.
Really?
Yeah. Much of this can be attributed to the fact that modern wheat varieties contain up to 40 times more gluten than heirloom varieties, as selective breeding, hybridization, and even genetic modification techniques that have applied over the years to improve wheat yields. This means that the type of wheat consumed by people today are far different than the types traditionally consumed by ancient societies. Wheat strains have been hybridized, crossbred, and introgressed to make the wheat plant resistant to environmental conditions such as drought, pathogens, such as fungi, adds Dr. Davis, but most of all genetic changes have been induced to increase yield per acre. Such enormous strides in yield have required drastic changes in genetic code.
Oh.
And such fundamental genetic changes have come at a price.
I guess so.
Yeah, and this is, you can check out Wheat Belly is this guy's, Dr. Davis' book. And that's why you get that fat belly. You know, that men and women get the belly.
Oh,
you know,
really?
It's the wheat that's not getting digested, causing inflammation and being stored in the fat cells, and that's why you get that flab around your center. It's very, very hard to get rid of. Okay. You want to get rid of it? Stop eating wheat. But you can also go to www.lef.org and you can see that wheat belly there.
I'm just glad I was never a big bread eater.
Or the wheatbellyblog.com.
Huh.
There was one more that I wanted to do tonight. We've got time for yes. Let me go to this.
What are you looking for?
I want to back out of this one.
Testifies to Congress that Obama ignoring laws.
I'd like to get to that one too, but there's one more that I thought I had. I guess I didn't. Sure.
Which one are you thinking of?
Here it is. Okay. This is it. EatLocalGrown.com is the place, but there's a. I don't know if it'll play well on this, but I'm not sure. I don't know if it'll play loud enough, though. I can get on here. What is it? EatLocalGrown.com, right? You can go to this website and check it out for yourself, but eatlocalgrown.com.
Is this it right here?
Yep. Just hang on. Let me see if I can. This has a better speaker. That's why it's on.
This can be pretty loud.
See if I can find it.
It's Robin O'Brien on kids and food allergies with
right.
GMOs.
Right. Why don't you start playing that? Robin O'Brien?
Twinkies and po' boys. I wasn't a foodie. What I was the oldest of four children, and as you often hear about, I inherited absolutely every single one of those type A over TV genes you read about in a firstborn child. And thankfully, I channeled that into business school. I received a full scholarship and graduated as a top woman in my class before going on to serve as a food industry analyst. And when management teams would come through our offices from Whole Foods and Wild Oats, you know, we kind of thought they had a nice marketing niche carved out. You know, it was either Lifestyles or Rich and Famous or some hippie thing. It just wasn't something that we were particularly on board with. And after doing that for a while, I traded the briefcase for a diaper bag. And with that same type A energy, my husband and I had 4 kids in 5 years. And up until that point, I really had not given a lot of thought about what was in the food supply. I figured if it was on grocery store shelves, it was safe. Don't tell me what to eat, and please do not tell me what to feed my kids. I had 4 picky eaters, limited time, limited budget, and I didn't want to care. And then one morning, over breakfast, life changed. And our youngest child had an allergic reaction. And in all candor that morning, that breakfast was Lego My Eggo waffles, tubes of blue yogurt, and scrambled eggs. And as her face started to swell shut, I was so unfamiliar with what a food allergy actually looked like that I turned to my older three and I said, dude, what did you put in her face? And they all gave me those blank little kids stares. And I got so scared. And I raced her to the pediatrician's office and she says, you know, Robin, she's having this allergic reaction. What did you feed the kids for breakfast? And I said, Lego, my Eggo, waffles, blue yogurt, and scrambled eggs. She said, well, those are 3 of the top 8 allergens, and she starts rattling off all the stuff about food allergies, and I'm thinking, you know, like, how can a child be allergic to food? And so as we got the baby calmed down, got everybody back home, put everyone down for a nap that day, and every single analytical gene in my body went off. Because I hadn't known anybody that had a food allergy when I was a kid. And so I wanted to dig into this data. I wanted to understand what was going on. And that morning, 5 years ago, I learned that from 1997 until 2002, there had been a doubling of the peanut allergy. I also learned at that point that 1 out of 17 kids under the age of 3 now has a food allergy. And I then went on to learn from the Centers for Disease Control that there had been a 265% increase in the rate of hospitalizations related to food allergic reactions. That was doctors checking kids into the ER. That wasn't mom. And so I wanted to know, you know, what is a food allergy? Well, a food allergy is when your body sees food proteins as foreign. And so it launches this inflammatory response to drive out that foreign invader. And so it just begs the question, is there something foreign in our food that wasn't there when we were kids? And so the analytical side of me, I turned to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. And I learned that, yes, beginning in the 1990s, new proteins were engineered into our food supply. And it was done to maximize profitability for the food industry. And as Sunny touched on, that made perfect sense to me as an analyst. It drove shareholder value, absolutely the fiduciary responsibility of the corporations that were introducing these proteins. But at the same time, no human trials were conducted to see if they were safe. And so milk allergy is the most common allergy in the United States, according to the Wall Street Journal and CNN. And so I wanted to know, you know, is there something in the milk that wasn't there when we were kids? And beginning in 1994, in order to drive profitability for the dairy industry, scientists were able to create this new genetically engineered protein and this synthetic growth hormone and inject it into our cows to help them make more milk. The business model makes perfect sense. It's a brilliant one. But at the same time, what happened is that it was making the animals sick. It was causing ovarian cysts. It was causing mastitis. It was causing lameness. It was causing skin disorders. And for that reason, it increased antibiotic use in those animals. And so governments around the world said, we're going to exercise precaution, and we are not going to allow this into our dairy and into our milk supply because it hasn't yet been proven safe. We took a different approach. We said it hasn't been proven dangerous. So we'll allow it. As I learned that, I thought, how many sippy cups have I filled with this milk? And how many bowls of cereal have I poured it on for my husband? Not knowing that Canada, the UK, Australia, Japan, New Zealand, and all 27 countries in Europe didn't allow it when it was introduced in the U.S. in 1994. And so I wanted to know, what are the conditions that we're seeing here in the U.S.? Because one of the concerns around this new growth hormone, this synthetic protein, was that it also elevated hormone levels that were linked to breast, prostate, and colon cancer. And so I turned to remarkable organizations like Livestrong and the American Cancer Society because I wanted to know what the rates of cancer were in the U.S. versus the rest of the world. The U.S. has the highest rates of cancer of any country on the planet. And according to the American Cancer Society, migration studies show that if you were to move here from somewhere like Japan, your likelihood of developing cancer increases fourfold. One out of two American men and one out of three American women are expected to get cancer in their lifetime. I also learned that one out of eight women has breast cancer. But then what I learned is that only one in ten of those breast cancers are genetic, which means nine out of ten of them are environmentally triggered. So kind of like, you know, when you're driving down the highway and you see an accident and you just keep looking and you're not really sure why, I wanted to know, you know, are these other allergies that we're seeing, have foreign proteins been introduced into our food there too? And shortly after milk was engineered with this new protein, scientists then engineered soy, and soy is also one of the top eight allergens. And again, to drive profitability for the soy industry, because soy is primarily used to fatten livestock, scientists were able to engineer the soybean so that it could withstand increasing doses of weed killer. And the business model, as an analyst, made perfect sense. You engineer the seed so that you can sell more weed killer. And at the same time, you've engineered something new into that seed so that you can patent it. So now you've got a patent on the seed, and you're selling additional weed killer. But once again, governments around the world said, no studies have been done to show if this is safe, to feed to the livestock and to feed to our consumers. And so we're going to exercise precautions in order to prevent the onset of any disease that may result. And in 1996, here in the U.S., we took a different approach. As I kept learning more about food allergies, I was hearing concern from parents about a corn allergy. And so I wanted to know, did corn get engineered? And interestingly, in the late 1990s, as concerns started to grow about the spraying of insecticide over cornfields, scientists were able to engineer that insecticide into the DNA of a corn seed so that as a corn plant grows, it releases its own insecticide. As a result, corn was then regulated by the EPA as an insecticide. If you can imagine, this was incredibly hard information to learn. We had introduced a term called substantial equivalence. It was a conceptual tool, and it's used by the tobacco industry to facilitate the approval process of something for which no human trials have been conducted.
We're going to lose people.
And that was the justification given for why we were introducing these things in the U.S.
I don't know how much longer it is.
And as I sat down one night with my husband, I said, I can't unlearn this. And I don't know what people will say if I try to teach them. But I have to try. And so the next morning, I came downstairs, and I sat our four kids down, and I said, you know how moms have learned some pretty tough stuff about what's going on in our food and how it's not in food in other countries, and it's especially not in food, said the kids. I have to try to do something about that. And one of my boys, he looked at me and he said, Mom, how many people are on your team? And I said, well, it's you four and Daddy. And he said, Mom, you need a bigger team. And he was absolutely right. And at that point, I've had people come up to me saying, your food's Aaron Brockovich. Your food's Aaron Brockovich. You should reach out to Aaron Brockovich. At that point, I did not want to be Suzanne Brockovich, and I thought, how in the world could I possibly reach out to her? But then all those type A genes started going off, and I thought, I have to at least try. If I could get through to somebody like Aaron Brockovich, then maybe we could create this change here in the U.S. And so channeling all of that energy, I honestly spent about 2 weeks crafting a 4-sentence email to Aaron Brockovich. And I fired it off. And I don't know if I ever really expected her to reply. But when she did, to have someone like that cheering you on suddenly makes you think that maybe one person can make a difference. So as I began to really dig into this and look at the fact that we were using all of these new ingredients in the U.S. food supply that we weren't using in other countries, I got to admit, it drove me absolutely nuts how expensive organic food was. And so I looked into the business model. And what I learned is that as a national family, sitting down to our national dinner table with our national budget, our taxpayer resources are being used to grow these crops, to subsidize the growth of these crops with all these chemicals. And then over here, the crops that are grown through the organic process, which means without the use of synthetic chemicals, those guys are charged fees to prove that their stuff is grown without it. Then they're charged fees about it. And then on top of that, they don't get the insurance and marketing program assistance that these guys over here do. So not only is their cost structure higher over here, but then on top of that, what I learned is that it wasn't just those farmers that it was impacting. The farmers who are fourth and fifth generation farmers who have been feeding our country for generations, because those seeds are patented, they now have a cost structure that's new too, because they have to pay royalty fees, licensing fees, and trade fees to even begin to plant those seeds on their farm.
That's ridiculous.
So when I thought about this, I thought, how are our American corporations exporting their products if these other countries don't allow these ingredients? And that's when I realized and found research that Kraft and Coca-Cola and Walmart, they are doing a remarkable job of responding to consumer demand in other countries. And they have formulated their products differently. So Kraft and Coca-Cola and Walmart, they don't use these ingredients in the products that they distribute in other countries. Now, when I first learned that, at first, it was kind of depressing. But then I thought, we just need to teach each other here. And as I reflected on the fact that we'd introduced these proteins, there had been all of this toxicity concern, I wanted to know, you know, what are we spending on healthcare versus the rest of the world? The U.S. spends more on healthcare than any country on the planet. 16% of our GDP goes towards managing disease. What that means is that a company like Starbucks spends more on healthcare costs than they do on coffee. And as an American, I realized this very easily could be affecting our global competitiveness. Because rather than driving profitability towards our core competencies in the global marketplace, we're managing disease. And I thought, we don't need to wait for regulation. We don't need to wait for legislation. We can begin to exercise precaution in our own families, in our own communities, and in our own corporations so that we can protect the health and well-being of our families and ultimately of our economy. And as I was coming through all of this knowledge and having dismissed all of it, it was pretty paralyzing. But then I realized you can't make the perfect the enemy of the good. And it's really all about progress, not perfection. And while none of us can do everything, all of us can do one thing. And just as you don't potty train a kid overnight, and you don't wean them from a sippy cup overnight, this is a process that it doesn't happen overnight. But that as each and every single one of us does one thing, we have the ability to affect remarkable change. Because each and every single one of you has talents and attributes that you are uniquely good at. And when you leverage that with something that you are passionate about, you can affect remarkable change in the health of your family, in the health of your company, and in the health of our country. And the bottom line is that there is nothing more patriotic that we could be doing. Thank you.
Yeah, that was Robin O'Brien. And
talking about food allergies.
I went to that website, and I couldn't it was on there, but it was linked, but you try it at eatlocalgrown.com. If you happen to be listening on Facebook and you are a friend, you can go to my Facebook site, Leo Steele, and check out my wall, and you'll see you'll see this video. It's called Robin O'Brien on Kids and Food Allergies from GMOs. Okay.
Yeah, we've come to the end of our show.
Yeah. Yeah. And,
so
we
should say goodnight.
Yeah.
And thanks for being with us.
Join us tomorrow night.
You try to eat healthy.
Yeah. And join us tomorrow night when we have. We should. I'm hoping that we have Larry Dorman with us from the Office of the Union, and also we will be discussing a couple of more really important health issues, environmental issues I wanted to talk about. One being cheese, okay, not eating dairy. Why? And what the problem is with that? And a couple of other very radical things that we weren't aware of. Yes, imagine that. Medical marijuana, the miracle of it is unbelievable. Some of the things that some of the cures that it has been doing. Also, top pharma brand of children's vitamins contain aspartame, GMO, and other hazardous chemicals. So we'll talk about that too. Horrible, frightening thing that they're giving kids as vitamins.
Jeez.
Unbelievable. So anyway, folks, thank you so much for joining us tonight, and please join us tomorrow. We guarantee to entertain you. And good night.